I am a rebel in a world which made developers versus operations the status quo. My name is Ben, an SRE leader, and I'm here today to share my experiences building successful SRE teams. In particular, I want to talk with all of you around the evolutionary path of SRE, how that path is influenced by the relationship between the software engineering teams and the site reliability engineering teams, and how the roles and responsibilities are allocated across those groups and change over time. We are 0 for 2 on pieces of technology working. Back in 2010, SRE was founded at LinkedIn as a scrappy band of firefighters. The intent was, quite frankly, to stabilize the site. I myself joined LinkedIn in 2012, 2 years later. And despite all the work that had already been done at that point, when I joined, it was still quite chaotic. When I joined, on-calls were still expected to be on-site, in the office, laptops on, ready to go, by 6 a.m. every day. And the reason for this was that we knew the site was going to go down sometime between 7 and 10 a.m. most days of the week. You see, at the time, LinkedIn got the majority of its traffic from the Americas, and that meant a very asymmetric traffic pattern occurred. So you would have the site largely cold, the eastern seaboard would wake up, and as a result, the site would go from cold to hot. As the different time zones would then wake up, the site would get hotter and hotter, and by the time California would wake up, the site would be on fire. Well, maybe in spite of that chaos, or perhaps because of it, three founding principles were set down because we knew we couldn't get sucked into just dealing with keeping the site alive one more day. And these founding principles have served us well for a number of years, guiding the growth of our organization. The first is site up. Now, site up does not just, as they refer to a website, this could be your mobile app, this could be your production service of some kind. Really, it's anything that you've told users they can trust, anything you've made a commitment to users, members, paying subscribers around. And site up is our chief technical operating priority. There will never be anything more important than this from a technical perspective because of the consequences. If you don't uphold site up, that means you're not upholding your commitments to your users. If you don't do that long enough, they will lose their trust in your company. And as soon as that happens, they'll take their business somewhere else. And then you, myself, and all of the other people in the company are probably going to be looking for a new company to join. Not great. The good news, though, is that for something that is has such dire ramifications for failure, it's not prescriptive. There's not an explicit checklist that says you must do these three or four things perfectly in order to succeed. There's a lot of freedom in how we go about solving this problem. And it could be everything from rigorous incident management process. It could be good architectural review for new services that are coming online soon. It could be something as simple as peer reviewing code. The important thing is, regardless of how you approach it, to deal with site up, you must make every engineer and every piece of code they write as reliable as possible. The second is empower developer ownership. I think we'd all agree that operations is a pretty hard problem. Keeping the site up, keeping things reliable is difficult sometimes, or much of the time. And it's critical that developers own the operations problem as much as anyone else does. As Bruno, head of SRE at LinkedIn, likes to say, it takes a village to run a website. I say it a little bit differently. I say that everyone's an operations engineer to me, because after all, it won't just be SRE who's out of a job if we fail. We're all in this together, like it or not. The point is, given that operations is a hard problem to solve, we need to bring 100% of our engineering talent to bear on this problem, not just the 10% of your company that happens to have site reliability in its title. And the last is, operations is an engineering problem. We don't want, and I know this may sound a little strange, but we don't want to solve operations through heroics and raw effort. No, it's just a software problem like any other, and we should solve it like software problems by engineering permanent solutions that stop these problems from coming back, or better, build in reliability in the first place so that we don't end up spending our time after the fact dealing with it. It's important to note, I mentioned site up was our chief technical operating priority. It is, it's a P0. It's at the very top of everything that we do. The other two up here aren't actually operating priorities at all, though. They're constraints. You see, if you have a permanent priority zero or something that everyone is supposed to be aiming for, it can lead to down some very weird paths, because SiteUp is kind of a nebulous thing. It's far-reaching, and it can encourage the idea of hero worship, perhaps, or celebrating the fact that I just survived a 36-hour war room, and that is somehow a good thing. Never mind the fact that we needed the 36-hour war room in the first place. So these other two up here, empower developer ownership and operations is an engineering problem, as they are up here as constraints to ensure that our efforts to support SiteUp are sustainable today and they become increasingly effective with time so that they don't go the wrong direction. Right. For those of you who were here last year, I'm sure that last slide sounded vaguely familiar. But now let's get into the new content. I'm going to cover five generations of SRE today, and we're going to start with the firefighter. I mean, let's face it, most companies do not agree to fund an SRE group before one of two conditions is true. Either they've got a minimum change velocity, that is the minimum amount of change they need to make every day to stay competitive in the marketplace, grows so large that more traditional operational practices start to fall behind, or you've got a blazing operational fire on your hands and someone has read a DevOps manual somewhere and is hoping this is the silver bullet to save them. Regardless of whether or not it's one extreme, the other, or something else entirely, all of us are going to find ourselves as firefighters at some point in our career, and that's why we start here. At this point, as you might imagine, it's a highly reactive role. Its biggest value is that incident management. The only strategic value at this point is quite literally learning, growing, and keeping the company alive long enough to fix its problems. Hence the concern over hero worship. And if we look at the roles and responsibilities between software engineering and site reliability engineering, for the rest of this talk, I'm going to refer to software engineers as SWE and site reliability engineers as SRE. But if we look at the breakdown between the firefighter SREs and the SWE groups, it looks like traditional operations at this point. It looks like there's not a huge amount of obvious difference yet. SiteUp is clearly represented, you know, incident management, the monitoring, the alerting. But even at this stage, we can already see the earliest influence of operations as an engineering problem. And it's not really about what you're focusing on every day. It's about what you're doing with your downtime in between the fires. In this case, it's seeking to understand the stack, learning, as well as automating the manual fire suppression. You know, if you go to work, you know, presumably you go to work 5 days a week, but you go to work every week and you have, say you have to bust a cache several times each week. Right around the second or third time, most of us, I think, would probably write a script to bust the cache for us and rebuild it. When I first started LinkedIn, that was a 2 or 3 hour job, and the point wasn't that writing a quick script to do it for me solved the problem, it didn't. But it gave me those 2 or 3 hours back to learn more about why it was happening and then figure out how to solve the problem. And then it starts small. This operations as an engineering problem influence starts very small in the beginning, but it grows quickly. Now I know that up until this point, it's all been quite ephemeral. It's all theoretical. So I'm gonna use my own team at LinkedIn as a case study in how we did, did well and did less well at each of these stages to make it a little bit more tangible, more real. And quick context, Tools SRE is responsible for all internal tooling at LinkedIn, and more recently has become responsible for several of our security-facing products publicly, as well as our internal security products. But for the purpose of this talk, we'll focus on internal tooling as the example. So the team was founded back in 2013, and when it got started, it was the epitome of firefighting. Our mean time to resolve outages, that is to say, our average time to fix an outage, was 1,500 minutes. And I see a few people nodding. I see one person looking a little worried. Yes, that is more than a 24-hour day. And I wish I was kidding. In fact, it was when we started, the outages were so frequent and so long that if I lined up all of our outages end to end, there would have been an outage in progress every second of every day of the entire calendar year. And worse, for half the year, there would have been two in progress at the same time. You got to start somewhere. So what did we do? I mean, that's pretty bad starting conditions. Well, we rolled up our sleeves and we got after it. We started pursuing SiteOp. And GCN, if you notice, is up here. That is just LinkedIn's nomenclature terminology for outage. So if that pops up anywhere else, it just means outage. Essentially, all team members that were coming out of one outage would be heading with me to the postmortem with our partner suite teams. For the other team members who had had some rest, they would be heading into the next outage with the other partner suite teams. We'd get our action items, we'd go implement them, and right around the time we finished, we'd go back into the next outage. Now, this rapid succession of fixing problems started off, as they start off with monitoring, with alerting as the primary focus, because we didn't know what was going on. And on the next slide, this will show up as why this matters. And in some cases, we instrumented our code base. We got our hands got dirty with code for the very first time with, well, let's instrument it. Following that, in some cases, we couldn't instrument code, though. We ended up writing external observers. Our first products were external observers that literally would emulate a user and then emit those metrics for us because we couldn't instrument the code base because it was a language we weren't familiar with. Well, the good news is that we made progress, or I wouldn't be standing here. Winston Churchill has been quoted, requoted, and misquoted many times over the past 50 years, 60 years or so. If you're going through hell, keep going. And that is really the theme for this. When you first start off, you're often going to inherit a situation that isn't great. And no matter what you do, we have to keep moving forward. You will make it out of this. The good news with this stage is that it is not technically complex to break free from, but it is hard. And it's hard because of the first principle here. Every day is mundane operations. This is a talk I've given before more extensively. If you're curious, everydayismundaneoperations.com delves into more detail. But for the purposes of this, it's the principle that there will never be an end to the problems that we need to solve. That's not success, and we should throw out that idea of success right now. Instead, it is the idea that in spite of that condition, we must continuously reach up, grab the biggest, most impactful, painful problem we can, solve it, put it to rest, and go back and grab the next biggest, and then the next. And after years worth of effort, you will find, if you started with 100 problems, you will find that you still have 100 problems. You can't reduce the quantity either, but you can reduce the scope and severity of the problems by actually fixing root cause. Putting this in perspective, there was a time a couple years back when I had developers across the country, software engineers everywhere, going home early on a Thursday afternoon because they could not get a build that entire week. And yes, my team does own the build system, unfortunately. We fixed it, we moved on, we learned. A couple weeks ago when I gave the first prototype version of this talk at an internal conference, I actually had received a phone call the prior week, so about 4 or 5 weeks back now, from a very upset software engineer that they were 3 minutes late to their team lunch because my build system took an extra 6 minutes to get the job done. The problems don't go away, but the scope can dramatically shrink with time, and that's why this is something to be optimistic about and not pessimistic, despite the fact you'll always have problems. The second item on the list, what gets measured, gets fixed, is a critical requisite for everyday's mundane operations, because if you can't measure something, well, how do you know it was the most important problem to solve? This adage is not one that I came up with, of course. This came from a company called Hewlett-Packard. Long before personal computers, home printers, or even the internet was terribly common, they were in the business of making measurement devices. Yeah, honestly, these were devices that were more at home in a scientific lab than in a tech company. Think oscilloscopes. The important thing is they knew what they were talking about. You see, if you can measure a problem, you can reason about it, you can discuss it, you can experiment on it, you can try and change it. But if you can't measure something, not only can you not prove that you fixed it, you actually can't prove it was broken in the first place. So if you can do just these two things, you will grow past firefighter. You will move on to the next generation of SRE. Now, a quick aside, the gatekeeper, generation two, is up here for completeness sake. This is actually an evolutionary dead end. This is not a place you want to be, but it is up here because it's incredibly easy to accidentally grow into this role for all the right reasons and then end up getting stuck. because this is unfortunately a potentially terminal state for SRE teams. So it's up here to talk about how we get out of it, not because it's the preferred growth. In fact, you can definitely skip this stage, and I'll talk about how later on. Suffice it to say, after we've spent months, maybe years, stabilizing production, we've finally got a bit of free time to think about what do we do next. It's natural to develop a protective instinct over production because none of us want to go back to spending sleepless nights firefighting. We don't want that. The problem is that protective instinct so often gets off the rails, and the first thing we do with our newfound free time is we build a wall around production. We put a few doors in it, we lock them, and we keep the keys with SRE so that those developers can't hurt our production with their change. That's three us versus thems right there. And the problem with this is that it starts that us versus them culture. And if I'm entirely honest with all of you, though, this idea is not fully without merit. It has the right intentions of trying to keep site up, but it flies in the face of empowered developer ownership, and we'll talk about that more in a moment. And it also will often fly in the face of operations as an engineering problem. The roles and responsibilities start to change, not necessarily for the better. Say, if we look up here, SRE, gatekeeping SREs, well, as I typically implement a pattern of human gatekeeping, that idea of you must talk to me if you want to touch production. And that means that quickly our traditional operations routes will be leveraged to gain control of deployments in general, or perhaps more generally, to adopt change management as our go-to way of holding back the people who might hurt our production. It's also worth noting that in doing so, we've given the software engineers a new job responsibility: request changes from SRE. Sounds nice, but the way it should actually read, if I wasn't concerned about this being taken out of context, is software engineers have been told they must find the most efficient way to get past SRE gatekeeping. And that means not following your process, let me be very clear, because your process is probably friction prone. I know mine was. Well, there's also two anti-patterns I think are worth calling out, because gatekeeping can be a little weird. Is that the idea of human-powered gatekeeping? The first anti-pattern I feel like I need to call out on stage is the idea of a release team. Now, I know that's an overloaded term, so let me be very clear. I do not mean release team as in a group of people who help other teams figure out how to release a new product or publicly launch something at the quality standards we expect at our companies. When I say release team as is an anti-pattern, I mean the team whose literal job it is to push a deployment to push a button to deploy someone else's change. That's quite literally human gatekeeping. And if your company is of even moderate size, they probably don't fully understand the changes that are being written because of how many changes they have to deal with. So what's the value add? The second one that I want to call out, this one's probably a little bit more controversial, and I expect some of you to find me in the hallways after this, is the idea of release windows. Release windows, as I sound great in practice, or sound great in theory, rather. The idea is that you prevent unfortunately timed outages by restricting when change can happen. That sounds like it's in support of site up. The problem with this, though, is that it's treating the symptoms of the problem, not the actual problem at hand. It's treating the idea that we have inadequate information being provided to people trying to make change happen. And instead of giving them the right information, making sure that the changes they make are as reliable as possible, instead, it's telling them not to do part of their job for some period of time. You know, one of my favorite versions of release windows that I think is a great example as to why it's an anti-pattern is the idea of read-only Fridays. It's pretty common one that pops up on the RSysAdmin subreddit. It pops up in a number of other places as well. And it's the idea that, you don't want outages on the weekend, so don't deploy on Friday. Okay. And while that may work somewhat in preventing outages, what's the cost of telling all of your engineers in every organization not to do a key part of their job 20% of the work week? It may make sense in tactical situations where you need to regain control of a bad situation, I'm not saying it doesn't have its use cases, but from a purely technical sense, it doesn't have a lot of merit. And I will come back to address that, don't worry. We're not done with the release window conversation. So let's talk about tools SRE, the gatekeepers. So we didn't actually become gatekeepers. We accidentally avoided this stage entirely, and I'm glad we did because it gave me an extra few slides for this. But the short version is that unlike a lot of teams at LinkedIn, we got started late. We were not founded until 4 years after our partner SWE team was founded, which meant we had 4 years of technology built to keep up with a company undergoing hypergrowth that did not necessarily take into account reliability as a priority. And worse, my team members were outnumbered. 41-1 was the ratio at this point in our journey. Software engineers that we were directly accountable for working with compared to us. So we knew we couldn't use our role power to do human gatekeeping because they would just go around us. Yeah, there's no way to stop that. Now, because we're tools SRE though, we got a lot of feature requests during this time period to help other people with their human gatekeeping processes, because at the time we hit here, a lot of other teams had also hit this at LinkedIn. And it's the only feature I regret implementing at LinkedIn is the feature called Service Guard. It was an augment to our deployment system for someone in the front row right here. The context is that there was a communications breakdown between two different teams at LinkedIn, the team that was responsible for supporting a critical piece of software and the team who was trying to deploy it at inopportune times. Well, suffice it to say, what this was essentially a whitelist implementation. And it would allow the trusted users, that's code for SRE, to whitelist all of their team so they could do whatever they wanted. And it forced the untrusted users, that's code for software engineer or the release team we had at the time, to not just ask for approval to run deployments, but to quite literally go to their desk and ask, can you run this command for me? Short term, it did solve the miscommunication problem, but it also drove our teams apart for at least a year or more. Not exactly a pattern that is sustainable for the long term if we want to bring 100% of our engineering talent to bear on a problem. The good news about gatekeeping, though, if you can do just two things, you will grow past it. So a man far wiser than I, by the name of Fred Kaufman, has been quoted many times as saying, there's no such thing as the hole is in your side of the boat. And that is not necessarily the theme for gatekeeping. It's actually the opposite of the theme. But from the moment you decide that there is no way for you to be successful without your partner teams, and there's no way for them to be successful without you, and you realize you're in this together, you've taken your first step towards getting past gatekeeper and undoing the cultural damage that may have been caused already by this point. So in support of that, the first thing you must do is attack the problem, not the person. Remember, your problem is not those software engineers. Your problem is not their change. Your problem is not the fact their code quality isn't where you think it should be. Your problem is not the performance degradations that they're introducing. Your problem is none of that. Your problem is site out. That's it. So what does that mean? They're introducing changes that degrade production in some way, shape, or form. How is that not our problem? Well, attack the problem, not the person means you cannot ever try and hold someone back as the standard way of operating, because all that's going to do is cause problems. We have to figure out how to, help them go faster and be more reliable. It is possible, and we'll talk more about that as we keep moving. The second is no more human gatekeepers. Now, to be clear, we do need gatekeeping. We all do. What we don't want is human-driven gatekeeping. We don't want opinions deciding whether or not something's good enough. What we want is to establish an agreement between partners that describe what the minimum successful criteria is for change. Take a simple example. Let's say that we agreed, you're all my software engineers and I am your SRE. I'm outnumbered a little more than 41-1 right now. But let's say we agreed that no new build goes to production that has an endpoint with a performance degradation of more than 100 milliseconds for any reason. Now, obviously in the real world, you'd have way more requirements. You'd also be much more stringent than 100 millisecond drop. But for the sake of this, we'll keep it nice and simple. Well, let's say it's time for a product to ship. You got a week to go. You get your new build, and I show up at your desk and go, can't deploy that. It's too slow. It's not good enough. Your first reaction is very likely, that guy won't let me do my job. I'm being held back by that one. It's his fault, not mine. That sucks. No one wants that. But if we already had that agreement in place about what minimum success was, and we said no build goes to production with more than 100 milliseconds performance degradation, and I have built that into our deployment system, so that same engineer goes to get that deployment, and that system says, I'm sorry, this build is not available for deployment because it violates our minimum agreed upon standards. You're actually 130 milliseconds too slow. You got to improve your build by 30 milliseconds. They're still going to be mad. They're still going to be frustrated. They're still going to be upset. But instead, the first conversation is going to be, I need to make my build faster so that I can deploy. That's encouraging people to act like owners. And when they come to you, they're not going to come to you usually asking for an override. They might occasionally. But when they come to you, you'll have an opportunity to say, let me help you make your build faster. You've taken a human conflict and you've turned it into an engineering conversation, which is an unfortunately large part of our role, actually. One more quick note, by the way, on gatekeepers before we move on. There's a certain intense irony, I think, around gatekeeping. It starts off as a protective instinct. It starts off as the desire to do good for site up. And every single engineer I've ever talked to, every single one, whether interviewing, whether LinkedIn, whether across industry, has told me that they would rather spend their time solving meaningful technical challenges rather than trying to deal with human conflict. Every single one of them. And I'm sure someone in the audience is going to raise their hand and say no, in which case we should talk about people management for you. Well, the intense irony here is that for as much as we don't want to spend our time on human conflict and we instead want to spend our time solving those meaningful technical challenges, as soon as we use human gatekeeping, we guarantee the manufacture of human conflict. And unfortunately, when human conflict pops up, you don't get to ignore it because it doesn't sit in a box. It doesn't wait for sprint planning. No, it just kicks in the door and starts complaining about how everything is broken. So, enough with the less fun stuff. Let's start getting into the good stuff in the presentation. At this point, I need to introduce a new term, and that is center of gravity. A center of gravity for the purpose of this conversation that we're going to define like this. The principal thing or activity that must be kept in balance in order for an organization to operate effectively. Now, the reason I bring this up here is that I would posit to all of you that every single SRE team in the entire world, bold statement, regardless of industry, getting bolder, that operates higher than Generation 2 has the same center of gravity. That is the ability to influence and be influenced by our partners. And this is going to play itself out through all of the remaining slides. The good news is now we're in the good stuff. Now we've made it to Generation 3. We've made it to the advocate. Now, obviously, the advocate, based on the first bullet point, is going to do something about creating a site-up culture. But really, honestly, the biggest value add with the advocate is to, first and foremost, go and rebuild those trusted relationships that were eroded, neglected, or otherwise damaged during the firefighting and especially during the gatekeeping stages. If you manage to go directly here from firefighter, then it's often that you just need to invest in building new ones. If you went here from gatekeeper, you've probably got some rebuilding to do. And of course, this begs the question, well, how do you go about rebuilding those trusted relationships? It goes right back to those three founding principles once more. SiteUp we've already been working on, but this is when we really have to start focusing on the consistency of our priority going to empower developer ownership as well as operations as an engineering problem. It's critical that this be reflected not just in hallway conversations with partner teams, but also in the engineering solutions that we build. Because we should be building. If you haven't started building by this point, Well, we need to. To go back to the release windows example, I mentioned it was touching on the symptoms rather than the actual problem. But if we're trying to implement engineering solutions that empower developer ownership and treat operations as an engineering problem, let's try this a different way. Rather than release windows, what if we invested in a good monitoring and alerting system that was self-service, that let people anticipate the impact of their changes before they made it, with a reasonable degree of certainty? It'll never be perfect, but it just has to be good enough to build confidence. And then let's say we further refine that system so that it was crystal clear what impact your change actually had. Okay, well, if I'm an engineer and I know that my change is probably not going to break production and I can tell for sure that it did or it did not after I push it, well, why shouldn't I be allowed to do my own deployments? So let's take it a logical step farther. If you provide the right information at the right time, then you build a self-service deployment system. And you go, all right, here's the information we're seeing. Here's where you should go look for more information. You know, use your best judgment. And if we let someone deploy their own code and roll it back in a self-service way, oh, gee, we just solved for release windows. We don't need them anymore. There's no more technical merit there. And that's what I'm talking about when I mean the symptoms. This is quite literally going after the problem, which is engineers making you not having the right information to make an intelligent decision, rather than telling them they can't do part of their job. Again, short term, you might have to make some trade-offs. We don't live in an ideal world. But longer term, we know we have to keep moving in this direction. And the roles and responsibilities have finally started to converge a bit. Notice that at this point, monitoring and alerting appears on both lists. So does partnering around the development of that gatekeeping data. And just to reiterate the point, it's not really so much about the automated system to say yes, you can or no, you can't. It's about agreeing that data gets to make the decision as to what gets to happen and what doesn't. But in doing so, both teams now have skin in the game. Both teams now have a vested interest in making sure the monitoring is accurate, making sure the signal-to-noise ratio is good, because both teams stand to both gain and lose something if, you know, this data is bad. Now we're talking to each other, and that's an ongoing theme for the rest of this. So, tools of three, the advocates. I mentioned we were outnumbered 41-1. I mentioned that we got started 4 years late. And at this point in our journey, as we were leaving Firefighter, we looked around, we did investigate whether or not we could implement gatekeeping measures and follow the same path, you know, as our forebears did. And ultimately, we concluded we couldn't. So instead, we tried an absolutely outrageous approach. We tried to get the message out that we were not here to hold any of our partner teams back. In fact, we were here because we wanted them to do more for the company. And we believed that we could help them do more and spend less of their time dealing with firefighting and outages if they'd work with us. And after, I don't even know how many thousands of times I had to repeat the pitch, but eventually we boiled it down to just about two or three sentences. It happened in elevators, it happened in stairwells, it happened at my desk, it happened at other people's desks. But imagine you're on the receiving end of a conversation like this right after an outage. Look, you can either choose to spend your time helping me build site up and build reliability into our products now, or you can choose to help me when the site's down unexpectedly at 2 a.m. I need your help, because if I fail, all of us are gonna be up at 2 a.m. Not just me. You'd be amazed how many people actually want to help you with that when it's just dead simple and to the point. But either way, the idea came down to help us help you. And by repeating that mantra over and over and over, we started getting people on board. Jeff is the CEO of LinkedIn. And he's been quoted many times as saying, consistency over time equals trust. And that is the essence of what it means to be an advocate, SRE. We obviously have always been dealing with site up, but now we are making ourselves understandable, predictable. We are bringing the other two constraints into play, that empower developer ownership, and that operations is an engineering problem. At everything that we do, every conversation. To be rather blunt about it, to be an advocate and to make an advocate, the first bullet point here, you have to be relentless. Every conversation, every interaction, every code review, every architectural review, every new feature getting discussed. Why does sign-up matter? Why does reliability matter to them, to everyone who may be involved in the conversation? And how's it going to benefit them? Not just you, but them. How's it going to benefit the company and them specifically? And in having this conversation, you're going to find some people who are willing to give you a chance. They're not going to fully buy in, and that's okay. What they're going to do, though, is go, I want those benefits. Let's try it for 6 months or 3 months, whatever you can get. But as those benefits start becoming realized and as they start getting them, every single person, well, especially the more senior people who remember how bad it used to be and are starting to get excited because they're not getting called at night anymore, are going to flip from a moderately willing collaborator to an actual advocate. And they're going to start telling everyone else about how great this thing is for them and how they need sign-up. And with every new advocate you make, your job as Esther gets a little bit easier because you have to explain less about what sign-up is, less about what we're on about as engineers, and about why it matters. You end up with a situation where you may only have 10% of your company as SREs, but you've got better than 90% advocating for sign-up constantly because of how much they want the benefits it provides and how much they've already seen the benefits. The other thing that's worth calling out at this point, second bullet point up here, do not insulate pain. You have to share it with your partner teams. And this sounds really weird. It sounds like almost an anathema to sign-up. And unfortunately, it's worth calling out because it's an unintended side effect of both firefighters and gatekeepers. If the pain level is high enough that we need to produce a new SRE team, remember, it's probably the blazing operational fire, or maybe it's the traditional operational processes aren't keeping up. Either way, there's a high level of pain. When we get in the door, we start putting out fires. Every day is mundane operations. The pain level goes down. When we institute gatekeeping, the only pain our partner teams feel is our process, not actually the outages anymore. It is critical, remember that center of gravity, to influence and be influenced by our partner teams. It is critical that you and all of your partner teams share a common level of dissatisfaction with the state of reliability in your ecosystem. Because if you do not, if one team is in complete and utter pain and the other team is experiencing no pain, you're not going to fund the same projects. You're not going to prioritize the same things. But if both teams are in the same level of pain, it may not be a big deal and maybe something you make a trade-off on. But if both teams are in serious pain, I guarantee you that you're going to have no problems funding the right projects and solving the problem together. No problems at all. So let's talk about getting even better. Let's talk about the partner. Generation 4. This one is all about empowering intelligent risk. And what I mean by that is putting the right information in front of someone, regardless of what org they may be a part of, so that they can make the right decision or make the best decision possible. Generally speaking, engineers, regardless of org affiliation, are pretty logical as they measured against humans. So, I mean, people make mistakes, but we all like to think of ourselves as logical, and it's important that we put the right information in front of people at the right time so they can have a chance at making the right decision. I guarantee if you don't put the right information there, they won't make the right decision, or at least not very often. This slide is also pretty exciting for me because it's the first title slide that has the word proactive anywhere on it. The previous three all had reactive. At this point, going forward from here, we have to be collaborating because we're going to do far more good for the company by working together with engineers of all stripes rather than trying to solve it ourselves or rather than trying to work against any of the other engineering groups. So to do the most good we possibly can and to actually collaborate, we have to deal with planning. why did planning show up on the slide deck in the keynote? That sucks. I can see, no, seriously, like, there's 20 or 30 people in the room right now. Just short version is you at least need awareness. You need awareness of what they're trying to do and why, and they need awareness of what you are trying to do and why. That's all. It's nothing quite that bad. And at first, you're not going to be involved in every project, and that is completely okay. You might only be involved in two or three projects with the one team that you've been able to establish good working rapport with. But I guarantee you, as the planning cycles go by and those projects get delivered and the projects prove themselves, the ones that had both ESRI and SWE funding, prove themselves to be more reliable, more easy to maintain, generally better solutions all around, every other team that wasn't really bought in is going to turn right around and go, it's not fair that we're not getting enough ESRI time. Never mind, they were the ones who didn't really want it, you know, originally. Now they do. And as soon as that happens, you will never have enough engineers after this point to meet all the demands that are placed upon you. But that's okay. Now you just have to worry about what's best for the company and work on the most impactful projects. At this point, the roles and responsibilities really start to converge, which is fantastic. If you know incident management, now on both lists. By this point, both groups will be, as they should be, so familiar with the code base that anyone can solve just about any problem that pops up. So much so that you could have a hybrid on-call rotation by this point, where it's comprised of both cyber reliability engineers, software engineers, any other variant that you might have. And you don't know whether you're going to get an ESRI or a SWE on the phone until you call. And it doesn't matter because people are capable of doing this effectively. Alternatively, if you keep the tiered format, the important distinction is that an escalation from ESRI to SWE is no longer a call for a subject matter expert to help solve the problem for us. At this point, it's just a call for one more collaborator so we can do more things in parallel. That's a good place to be. It's also worth noting this relentless propagation of SiteUp now appears as a role and responsibility and will continue appearing. There's a certain minimum amount of constant investment we need to make helping other engineering groups understand our relatively new discipline of site reliability engineering, our purpose, what we're on about, the benefits we provide, SiteUp, the benefits that provides, to keep this culture going. But I will tell you right now, the time you have to spend on having conversation around what is SiteUp drops significantly over time as you hit critical mass. And it's way better than where we came from. All right, tools us to read the partners. Quick disclaimer, not all of my teams have made it to this stage of development. But for those that have, all of them have a couple of common attributes. All of my teams, as they have made it this far, pair with and plan together with their partner software engineering teams. And I don't just mean awareness of the process. They have a single authoritative document that allocates all of the reliability and all of the software-based resources across different projects. At this point as well, they stopped caring so much as to where they contributed to. They stopped limiting themselves to their own code base. Up until this point, it's pretty common to focus primarily on the software you write and supporting the software that someone else has written. This is right around the point, and you can do it sooner, but this is right around the point where if you haven't already, we need to establish a sense of transparency around our code. We need it to invite the software engineers into ours so that they can see the design patterns we're using and learn from our expertise in reliability, performance, and whatever other technology-specific subject matter expertise we may have. Likewise, in inviting them in, we also get invited into theirs, and now we can directly influence their code, directly contributing to it if we haven't already, as they're bringing our considerable expertise to bear and also learning from them as to how they're approaching problems. It's never bad to have engineers talking. We're just going to end up with better engineers. It's worth calling out as well that we also had a quick departure here, a pretty big departure from the way we used to limit ourselves to just our domain and our counterpart's domain. Tools us3 at this point stopped focusing so much on just that relationship, but also taking things that we learn and codifying them in code. The idea being, core libraries in particular, we authored new ones, we replaced old ones, we overhauled the majority of our Python-based core libraries, so much so that, say, better than 95% of all Python code at LinkedIn that's packaged in the standard way uses our code. The idea was we want to give people leverage so that they don't even have to talk to us because we can't talk to everyone. They should just be more reliable as a result of being able to use our stuff. And it worked out quite well. Sorry, this slide has if you can do three things. So for those of you from LinkedIn, you'll know that Dan Grillo is the Vice President of Foundation. That is the organization I primarily partner with. And he was quoted, I believe it's only been two times at LinkedIn, as saying we should operate on what needs to get done, not on an org structure. And I will say simultaneously, this was one of my favorite conversations, most proud moments in all of my time at LinkedIn, and it was also one of my most embarrassing. So of course it's gonna make it into the presentation. He was absolutely livid when he made this comment. And he was mad at me. He has a huge number of different teams, and we did not have full coverage of these teams with SRE yet. And I was prioritizing saving, you know, going back to firefighting for that new team that was having trouble, rather than looking at the benefits we could provide as partners, Generation 4, the future of the company. And he was upset with me. He started with this, and he was upset that I was prioritizing work that wasn't as meaningful in the long run. I was prioritizing urgent, not important. While no one likes having, no one likes being on the receiving end of feedback like that, at the same time, I can't help but look back and say, this is when we made it as SRE, at least as Tools SRE, since we got started late. This is when we truly made it, because the head of our partner organization was mad that we were trying to insulate them from pain and instead wanted us focusing on the most important work we could be doing. They understood the value we had, and they wanted us to go do that, the most important work, not so much the urgent work. Now, obviously, we weren't going to leave them out to drown, but they weren't quite drowning yet. We're never going to let someone drown. So if you can do just three things, you'll advance past partner and towards what I would call the apex of SRE's evolution, at least as far as I can see so far. First, the unified planning process. You need to have all of your resources allocated based upon your priorities in a single authoritative document that everyone can see and look at and reference, and then disagree with if they want to. Beyond that, though, you need to have your priorities, as I both side up technical priorities, as well as all of your business priorities in the same thing. That way, engineers can be working across organizational boundaries to figure out where they fit in the world, where this idea they have may fit, and where it probably sits in the hierarchy of needs. That's how you're gonna get more good ideas from the bottom up and not so much from the top down. And finally, you have to contribute where it counts and throw off your old limitations around, or old focus areas around just our code or just supporting theirs. The fifth generation of SRE is largely representative of what I would call the true north. It embodies the idea of reliability throughout the entire software lifecycle. It is fully, well, as proactive as you can be, there will always be incident management. That never goes away. But for the most part, we should be focusing on the future of the company rather than keeping it alive by this point. I would also argue that this generation is characterized by a consistent and confident answer to my favorite question of all time. What is your job? Well, we all have unique job functions, and that will never change. I may deal with internal tooling, you may deal with the consumer-facing products, you might deal with security, you might deal with data tier. But at the end of the day, all of us have the same job, and every engineer, whether SWE or SRE, should be able to answer with confidence by this point, my job is to help the company win. Everything else is just a job function. If that holds true, then you're gonna find no references left to us versus them, except maybe the org structure itself. You're gonna find strong partnerships all over the place where people are genuinely trying to do the best job they possibly can, and you're gonna find the best technical solutions popping up. So whether you find yourself today founding a new team and you're worried about what it entails to be a firefighter, or whether you've already advanced past gatekeeper and into what I would call the proactive sections of SRE, share your story. There's a ton of people here at the conference today that, and all of us could stand to learn more about different paths people have taken. Part of my role is to help, as I do the best I possibly can inside the company to to advance the thought of what is SRE, but also outside the company because it benefits all of us. We are a relatively new discipline. So, to that end, if you want to have a conversation on any of the stuff I've talked about, this QR code points directly to my LinkedIn profile, and I would be happy to connect with you and have a conversation around any of the stuff I've talked about today, any of the stuff you may be going through with your SRE teams, or any of the stuff that you disagree with. I'm open to that. It's how these things get better. Either way, thank you all for coming with me along this journey early in the morning in such an uncaffeinated state. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.